You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Why in the world would somebody that lives in Philadelphia move to Newcastle, Indiana? If you've been to Newcastle, Indiana, you're wondering that. You're like, what? Brian Nichols just moved. Caleb Franz just moved to the Midwest. And they're with me live at the kitchen table for the first time since 2019. So stay tuned. We're going to talk about why they moved to the Midwest and COVID and all that other good stuff. So stay tuned.
Warning. This show is for adults by semi-adults. So the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to the Chris Spangle Show. Our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. If you struggle to understand politics, we explain it from an independent, libertarian point of view. With all of the irreverence it deserves, we toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, Chris Spangle, a 15-year veteran of politics and media.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the program. It is great to be with you. Thank you for joining us here today. Going to be talking to Brian Nichols of The Brian Nichols Show and Caleb Franz of Profiles on Liberty. Both of them here on the Libertarian We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Excuse me. Before we start, we always thank our patrons. They're the reason that our three shows exist. And we want to especially thank our $100 a month members, John Pasilo, Lars Nordskog, Jake Edel, Matthew Durbin, Ryan Hold, Christy Avery, and Jason Doolittle. Brian Nichols, like I said in the open, just moved from Philadelphia, and Caleb just moved from Dallas to Louisville, and they talk a little bit about why, and mostly we just rant about COVID. We were talking for an hour and a half about COVID restrictions and ranting, and Brian was like, maybe we should hit record. So that's what this one is about. Make sure you go and subscribe to The Brian Nichols Show and Profiles on Liberty. Caleb has a series going on right now about Black founding fathers that is just tremendous, and you're going to learn a ton. His show is like a great audiobook. He puts a lot of research into it, and it's really good. So go check out their shows. So let's continue the conversation right now with Brian Nichols and Caleb Franz. Well, we are back at the kitchen table for the first time since November 2019. That is the last time that we recorded a podcast around the table. And as I mentioned in the intro, Brian Nichols is here. Brian, hello.
Hi, Chris.
What a lovely voice. And then the dulcet
no, it's all nasally and blech.
The dulcet tones of Caleb Franz. Is it Franz or Franz?
Franz.
Franz?
Yes.
Like friends.
Yes, yes. We're all friends here.
That's so. All right. I like Franz, though. Can we change it?
You can do whatever you
okay,
want.
Okay, all right.
The Southern Isles?
Yeah.
That's a frozen joke.
So we have just been sitting here ranting about COVID policies for the last hour.
Brian's like, we should start recording this.
Maybe we should give it like press record and actually put some of this on tape. You know, Brian, you both moved, actually, which is why we're able to sit around the kitchen table. We haven't, like I said, we've been on Zoom since November 2019 because Harry and Reinhold were driving an hour. It's like, let's just do it on StreamYard. And then COVID hit, and obviously I don't want them in my house. They're vectors like crazy. So we haven't done, I don't think we had an in-person podcast on the Chris Spangle Show in that long. So it's great. We're going to be doing more of it. I've been calling all of our patrons, and they've all said, I miss when you like used to record before and after, and everything everybody liked about the show was because it was in person. So we're going to be doing more of this, especially now that you guys live close. Brian, I have a bone to pick with you.
Uh-oh.
So for the 15 years I have been friends with Jeremiah Morrill, the boss hog of liberty, I have endured the burden of being his friend is getting a link on Zillow to a Newcastle home every 3 weeks. Hey, why don't you buy a house in Newcastle? Well, because you don't have a Chick-fil-A. And nobody wants to live in Newcastle,
that's
Indiana.
That's a perfectly valid reason, exactly. By the way. Just to be clear, I am putting my loyalties there.
Well, we have one in Muncie. That's 30 minutes away. It's inadequate. And so you have moved to Newcastle, Indiana,
which I'm glad you did. I guess maybe I shouldn't look at it as a burden, like he's going to force me. You're the sacrificial lamb.
I just planted the seed for you.
Oh, see, he's in on it.
There are so many places right next door across right. the road. You can move right in.
He's scoping out homes for you to... Yeah.
And let's be real. The whole reason that we are even out here is because you invited me and my wife out here in the summertime for the We Are Libertarians pool party.
Right.
And you just... You were even trying to plant the seeds to get us out here in the first place. Well, where did the pool party happen?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, where did it happen? So Newcastle. That's right. And where do we go? We went down to the studio, which is now part of my studio.
Yeah, you got the other half now.
That's right, yeah. So, like, it just kind of worked out perfect, man.
I was surprised.
It's all your fault. You did it.
I was surprised that you guys actually moved to Indiana, because for, like, 2 years I've been saying, would you just stop bitching and move to Indiana? Because the thing about living here is I've been inconvenienced by lockdowns one time. In 2020, I wanted to go to BW3's at 10:30 at night, and they were a third capacity. Even though it was completely empty, I couldn't go in and eat delicious wings. That is the only time that lockdowns ever affected my life. Indiana was pretty much done by the July 4th, 2020. Because as we talked, once everybody was allowed to go out and protest for BLM, everybody went, oh, okay, yeah, this isn't as serious as we thought. And Indiana was fairly light. But like, let's start with the beginning of the story. Like, living in Philadelphia through the last 2 years... we've talked a little bit about this, I think, but I mean, let's go into depth. Like, what is it like for those of us who live in a red state, who have a Republican supermajority who kind of just went, you know, all right, I know what I should and shouldn't do. I'll just be careful. And then, you know, by the end of 2020, you're like, I've already had it. Or, you know, then once the vaccine came out and you could get boosters and all that, like, really, what are we doing here? That doesn't seem to be your experience in Philadelphia.
Well, no, because the rules kept changing. So we talk about like moving the goalposts. You saw that like all the time. So the rule was you had to get your vaccine and then you go back to normal. That kind of was like the original goalpost. And then it's like, oh, you need to get your booster. And now it's, you know, oh, you have to mask indefinitely. Oh, now you have to have your vaccine passport to go eat at a restaurant. And all these little extra things started getting sprinkled in to take more and more away, almost as a sense of like a punishment. And there was also the sense of just no optimism whatsoever. It was like everybody was in this constant state of uncertainty.
Anxiety.
And unable to plan things effectively. My wife's sister, my sister-in-law, she's getting ready to get married here this year. And for a party, you know, being able to effectively plan, like, hey, we have people who are unvaccinated. Will they be allowed into the venue? Yeah. Little things like that that you don't think about when you're out in a red state. Because you don't think about it. It's not a thing that you should have to think about. But the fact that it has not only been a thing that is on everybody's mind constantly, it's also seeped into just how people interact with one another. We've seen an uptick in homicides like crazy. There's drug overdoses. There's suicides running rampant. It's killing kids. Like you're seeing kids. I think the literacy rates were dropping to like the you know, wasn't it 20%, Caitlin? What was it for Philly? It was bad, though. It was really bad. Like, your average kid, their rates were plummeting over the past 2 years because kids aren't going to school. They're not being able to track the kids as they go in. It's been wild.
Did you read the book Outliers, where there's a chapter in there where they're talking about low-income families and higher-income families? And
is that the Malcolm...
Malcolm Gladwell book, and talking about how wealthy families or higher-income families will take their kids to museums through the summer and reinforce learning. And read to them and kind of engage them in learning activities. And then lower income families, the parents have to work and they can't necessarily afford to take the time to take them to museums or to read to them. They're kind of on a survival mode. And so the beginning of the year tests for lower income kids are always less than the higher income kids. Now imagine 2 years of no schooling and not just 2 months, right? Like that's really the cost that we're going to bear out in the future. Even here in Indiana, when I did the Now Hear This show, 300% calls into the suicide hotline, doubling to quadrupling the amount of need at Gleaners Food Bank, which supplies food banks. Right now in Bloomington, there's a food bank that is empty. So we're not, I mean, they literally have nothing left. They got picked clean in Bloomington, which is a fairly affluent community. So I mean, if we had light touches in terms of lockdowns compared to a place like Philadelphia, I can't imagine the impact of that. Like when we were planning our wedding, our concern was older people in our family that might come and want to be a part of it. It's like we didn't think about that, but we went to a beach in Florida because we didn't know if the city would, in the Delta surge, take that away. Like it is just all these uncertain rules that don't make sense. But like, when was the last, how long before you could go to the gym, for instance?
I never went back to the gym, honestly. I mean, I don't even know what the rule was, because frankly, I did not want to wear a mask when I'm working out, just because that sucks. I went to the gym once wearing a mask, and the first, I was doing a shoulder press. Remember, I put the weight up, and I breathed out, my glasses fucked up, and I couldn't see in the mirror, and I'm like, I don't know.
I'm done. All right.
I don't know where the weights are going. So I was like, yeah, I'm never going to do this again. And I went home, and I pretty much was in the mentality of like, I won't go to the gym until I don't have to wear a mask.
Yeah.
So I ended up working out at home pretty much, which thank God for, you know, at home workouts and weights and stuff. But otherwise, yeah, I didn't really see too much of an uptick in people going back to the gym either. I would drive by the gym and you'd see the gym would be pretty much like half the parking lot, quarter of the parking lot would be full. And it used to be jam packed, like overflowing into the Target parking lot. Normal, like your average person didn't want to go into that environment. And we saw a direct difference between the way that people would approach the policy and then the way the politicians would approach the policy based on what they thought people would want versus like what the actual person wanted.
Right.
And that's what we were talking about beforehand, how we really saw that show with Jack Cittarelli over in New Jersey. He was the guy who ran against Phil Murphy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. We'd see the commercials. He'd come out wearing his leather jacket, but he would always talk. He was the opposite of Murphy, and he was talking about the most important issues, lockdowns, school choice initiatives, you know, the fact that kids were forced to be home for the past 2 years. And he ended up pretty much a no-name. He was an assemblyman, I think it was, for a few years. And he ended up being within a few thousand votes of Murphy. And what was supposed to be a completely safe seat.
New Jersey. For governor, right.
Yeah. And the fact that he got that close, I think it opened up a lot of politicians' eyes that this isn't popular.
Yeah.
And we saw with the COVID surge in the past few months here of the winter that a lot of these politicians doubled down. But now they're realizing that not only was that not the way that people want things to go, but now we're seeing a direct response from people, not just like being against this stuff, but like actively going against the government. And we're seeing this really unfold in Canada. Like that's what's happening with the Freedom Convoy. People are done, and rightfully so. It's been 2 years of this insanity, and people just want to go back to some sense of normalcy.
Well, that's kind of what we saw in Virginia too, right? With Youngkin, like Virginia, I had lost hope for a long time ago, but this past fall and the red wave that kind of swept through the state, I was really surprised, but it was really obvious why that was. And now, like, people are starting to realize, like, this is not a sustainable solution.
It's the never-ending emergency. Like, I was telling them before, I was 18 when 9/11 happened. So I lived through Iraq and the build-up to that war, and everything we're experiencing now is exactly what we experienced then, except you flip-flop sides. Like the predominant cultural influence was the Republican administration. The culture was conservative. They punished people like Neil Young and the Dixie Chicks and people who spoke out against the war, which was a very small minority of people in the beginning. And then it snowballed. And then Ron Paul capitalized on it. And that's how many of us kind of heard non-interventionism in the libertarian world for the first time. But Democrats had kind of been holding that post, I'd say grassroots Democrats. People like Joe Biden were for the war. And I voted for it before I voted against it, as John Kerry said in 2004. And now it's just so interesting to see people like Neil Young, who were like victims of being silenced, being on the opposite side of that kind of stuff. But the never-ending emergency of Iraq, look at all that led to, not just the debt, the domestic spying program, the division in our culture that sprouted the seeds of now. And I think people, maybe there is an awareness, and I see it in the left-leaning people that I talk to in the pat-down, like, I'm ready to go back to normal. Like, why is everybody more afraid? We've got boosters. What are you doing? You know, why is we went to the Y the other day, and it's a big Y downtown, and the only people required to wear masks are the 3 to 8 year olds in the play and learn. And you walk in and it's 20 kids under 3. They're all sick. not wearing masks, and then they force our kid to wear a mask. They didn't have any because they had run out of masks, 3 boxes of 500 in a week. Do that math. And then she's getting put in timeout because she's doing the normal thing, which is taking the mask off, right? But then you walk out in the building and 98% of the adults are not wearing a mask. So what's the point? What's the medical reason that you're putting a toddler in timeout for taking off a mask? What's the point? You know, so it's just these uneven, like the seeds at the Walmart in Michigan. Or
I forgot about that.
You can't go protest against the lockdowns, but you can go protest for George Floyd. Like this, Caleb, you mentioned this. I want you to talk about it. It's the greatest. Like, I think it's pretty clear that the central planning that we all figured would fail failed. The John Hopkins study, which we'll dig in deep later. It's like the vaccines were the only thing that mostly worked. Our best laid plans didn't happen.
I think also a lot of people mistakenly, reasonably to some degree at the beginning, but mistakenly judge the intentions of the people implementing these policies as altruistic or right. good. And that has very much proven to be not the case. I'm not saying that, you know, those intentions weren't ever there, but it's very clear that like, they got a taste of power and they didn't want to give it up, and they would much rather move the goalpost than let people go back to normal. And everyone just kind of assume like, oh, this will be over. If we all do what they say, then and we all march lockstep, then we will eventually get to the end of this. And then now people are finally starting to realize, actually, probably not. If that's the case, we're not going to end this until we actually start to push back against
Why are we taking our shoes off at the airport?
Yeah.
Why are you still doing that? Because once the government takes a power, they don't give it back. Yep. And so, you know, I've really tried to push my audience, which is center right, center left, to like realize what you do now in Philadelphia with vaccine passports. You know, you see somebody talking the other day about, you know, we need an AIDS vaccine. It was Harry, Prince Harry. Well, now you better get that or you're not going to go see the Documents of Freedom in Philadelphia, or you better get your flu shot because flu Rona exists, right? Like, it's only going to continue to expand until people stand up and say no. And Austin Peterson thought it was funny when I shared it, but he was the only one that got it, because in April of 2020, I just posted, you can open your business if you're not a pussy. People thought I was joking, but like, I'm serious. If you don't do it now, it's only going to continue to expand. Justin Trudeau is showing you that it is about obedience. You need to obey me. It doesn't matter that 83% of America is vaccinated. We've realistically reached herd immunity. You need to obey. And that is what it is about.
Well, it's so clear that it's about obedience, too, because when you have a lot of these cities, which fortunately, I think they're starting to realize, like, they don't have as much power in this situation as they thought they did. But with the vaxports, it's so obvious that it's just about obedience, because like Washington, D.C., for example, when they implemented theirs, they were very clear that a negative COVID test is not a good excuse to not have a vaccine passport. And it's like, well, what's the point? Like, is the purpose of this to make sure you're not spreading the virus?
Right.
Because a negative COVID test would do that just as much as a vaccine passport. So it should be either or under that line of thinking. But it's about like making sure that you are doing what the state says that they want you to do.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny how the experts that were always propped up to were the state experts? It was never anybody outside the apparatus. If you brought up anybody who brought up anything in terms of the main narrative, then they were labeled as a quack, a conspiracy theorist, and they were pushed either pushed to the side or they were either banned on social media. So we see that there has been, also to Caleb's point, a consolidation more towards this, you can only trust the government narrative. And we can see this go into the foreign policy here
with the Ukraine. Richard Engel tweets out last night that they have some document and that a Defense Department spokesperson says X, Y, and Z, didn't give the name, and we're just supposed to trust this journalist who is verifying information through the government.
Right.
That is what journalism is now. It is going to a government authority to validate the piece of information, not Cy Hirsch going and investigating the My Lai massacres and powers covering things up. It's backwards. And you're seeing it with Ukraine. Like, Ukrainians are going, please stop talking, Joe Biden. You're making it worse.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, you're not helping the situation. If they invade, it's probably going to be because, like, all of the international community is provoking him to actually invade. And that just is completely falling on daft ears.
It's literally the meme where the two people are fighting with crabs, and then there's a crowd of people around them.
Yeah.
Like, our government is the crowd in Ukraine. Yes, I mean, so what is the psychology of the people that you meet in Philadelphia? Like, what are the avatars that you kind of meet in a place like Philadelphia when you live down there?
I was just going to say that's exactly what I was going to say.
Not just those people, but I'm sure there's people like you that kind of are, you know, there's like a strain of different type of people.
Oh, they're terrified to speak out, though.
Really?
Your average person is so afraid to speak out because the groupthink mentality is so real in Philly, especially with the hive mind leftist approach to things. It gets really bad. And your average person is afraid to speak out of... When they see something wrong, they're like, well, I'm just following the rules, or I don't want to go against whatever the group is saying because I don't want to be the one that's awkward and cast out. Yeah. And I think we see that in a lot of these, you know, big cities, especially because you're in such close proximity. You kind of feel part of this larger community and that you have a responsibility in a lot of cases to like do your part almost.
Yeah.
But there comes a point where you see this push more towards this collective mentality of we're all in this together, right? And that has now permeated even beyond what it was originally pushed for, the narrative of the past 2 years. And it's like in any initiative, it's like, oh, we're doing an anti-gun campaign because if it saves one life, because we're all in this together. It's like that, and that mentality has gone into other areas as well. And are things getting better? No. And that right there is where we're seeing more people leave those cities because they're so tired of seeing their tax dollars not going to making things better, but actually things are getting like substantially worse
yeah, in some of these
substantially
cities.
Worse. Yeah.
I talked to one of our patrons last night from Portland, and they're the people there are up in arms over this new tax that are supposed to help the homeless, and it's going to everything but, you know, like road taxes here don't go to roads. They go to anything else. They go to help cops. They go to help firefighters. It doesn't go to roads here. People want to be nice. It's like, you know, people will wear a mask to your business if you ask them to. They'll be nice. But there comes a point when, like, we're reaching that point pretty quickly where the middle of the extremes is going, I'm done being nice.
Well, there has to be rationality, too. Like, so we talk about this in the world of sales where people make decisions based on emotions, but then they have to rationalize that with logic afterwards. Yeah. And that's why it's so important when you're going through the sales process that you identify what are the emotional triggers that are going to push somebody to make a buying decision, but then what can you give them to when they're sitting afterwards or
thinking about it when they're sitting on in their chair at like 11 p.m.
and like,
just
need,
like thinking about like what just happened
let
there?
Me look at this
oh
really
yeah
quick.
Why
yeah.
is my toddler in a mask
yeah
but like they want to check the features and benefits, right? They want to rationalize that decision that they made with logic and reason, and that's right there where people are at. They can't do that anymore. They see that there is no connection with the emotional fear that they feel and the tangible outcome of what these policies were promoted to have actually accomplished.
Yeah.
And actually, if you were to go use the Tom Woods quiz, which I do love, that compares the different charts, there is no discernible difference between those states or cities that went and enforced these different mandates
versus those
that didn't. You can't pick it out. I love that quiz.
Like, same with countries, too.
Exactly,
like,
yes.
People who are the countries and the cities and the states who had strict lockdowns, had spikes, the cities and countries and states that had very little to no lockdowns also had spikes and they also went down. There was no correlation between like, let's lock down so that way we can make sure that people stop getting sick, because people got sick regardless. It just ran its natural course. And now we're finally getting to a variant of COVID that is by all measures that we can tell at this point, a very mild variant that may like
bring about the end of COVID much more than any of the measures that the government tried to put together.
Which we kind of knew was going to happen.
Well, yeah. Anyone with any sort of like logic in their brain would just know that, like, yeah, the things that we were taught about how viruses and immune systems work in grade school still apply.
Yeah.
And it's happening today.
All you had to do was just do a little bit of research at the beginning. You know, like John Campbell, I've mentioned his YouTube channel. I watched him, you know, religiously the first couple months, and he's like, all right, if you're over 65, you really need to be cautious. Maybe take it care, be careful, wait for the vaccine, wait for this or that, you know. But if you're 22, you're going to be fine. You're going to be, you know, and so it's, if you did some research in the beginning, you were okay. And anybody who lived through Iraq and all that stuff knew exactly how this was going to play out, and it has.
Because, or at least learned the lessons.
Yeah, exactly. They're not going to let you go back to normal until you push for it and demand it and speak up, mm-hmm. and your voice has to be heard and counted. You know, and if you don't, we're never going to go back. You're never going to be able to go to Washington, D.C. or Philadelphia and see Independence Hall or the Declaration of Independence without a vaccine and a mask and it's
checking your papers to go see the literally, documents of liberty.
Literally. I don't know. It's I think it's just kind of comical and people are starting to see it. They're just too afraid to speak up because there's a lot of liberals that I talk to, or progressives, I should say, that don't speak their mind because they don't want people to think they're a DeSantis fan or an anti-vaxxer.
Well, and that's crazy. That was the narrative for a while, too, was that whenever these mask mandates were starting to lift, a lot of people on the left on Twitter and just out and about were like, I'm still going to wear my mask, not because I'm scared, but because I don't want people to think I'm a Republican. And
yeah.
It's like, so you clearly aren't doing this for any scientific reason, yeah. But you still want to lecture me about being like having the moral superiority on who's right on the science.
Well, that's the answer right there. It was never about protecting yourself or protecting somebody else. It was showing that you were morally superior.
Right.
Again, sister-in-law living in the heart of Philadelphia, she was talking about how like she had neighbors who would judge if you didn't wear your mask when you were outside walking yeah. your dog. And it's like, who does that? What kind of person does that? And it goes into the morally superior mentality, like, yeah. I'm doing this, why aren't you?
Yeah, because like it's what we were talking about, I think before we started this, was like it's become a religious cult. Like
yes.
you've sinned if you don't have your mask on, or if you catch COVID, you clearly are doing that because it's like a punishment.
Well, and that's why you see also the uptick in like the articles of, well, the unvaccinated person who died, like, and yeah. it's always the laugh reaction
or the
yeah
or
exactly.
you didn't do anything wrong if you have COVID, don't be ashamed.
Yeah. And then the other part that just drives me crazy is if the narrative of the person got COVID, but if I didn't have my vaccine, it would have been a lot worse too. It's like, no, everybody's going to get Omicron. It's pretty much going to be the same outcome
yeah.
because Omicron's a pretty mild disease. I mean,
as Bill Gates said, sadly, it's like a vaccine.
Yeah, right.
Dude, Bill, I'm not on their team about you, Bill, but man, that was not a good slip, buddy. Like you're not helping yourself when you say, sadly, the natural immunity built from Omicron works. Like,
sadly, our arguments have failed.
Well, and it makes sense all of a sudden why natural immunity was not discussed for
forever.
I was true story. I'm in my office. I'm talking to my VP of sales.
Yeah.
And I'm talking, he brought something about the vaccine. He's like, people just gotta get the vaccine. I said, well, what if somebody had natural immunity because they got it before? And he looked at me like 100% honestly, like, what's that? and I just fell on the chair. I'm like, natural immunity. You know, if you get the disease, like, or the virus, you are much less susceptible to get in yeah. the future because your body will recognize it and can fight it. He goes, I haven't heard about that before.
Oh,
like, and I'm like, biology? You think? Well.
What's insane about this is that like the experts, TM, is like they're treating this like it's the first time we've ever had a virus,
right?
Like in history, like we've never experienced virology before or anything like that. It's like we already know these things, and the things that we already knew, the things that we were taught from like grade school about how our immune systems work. That's still playing out the same way, even though like anyone who pointed that out was going to be like banned on Facebook and
I got
shot down for being, you know, spreading hate speech or
crazy
false
anti-vaxxer. Yeah. Like, and the misinformation stuff, like I'm currently throttled. My algorithm will not feed me to people on Facebook because I posted a meme that said we're 10,000 days. The Berlin Wall stood for 10,000 days. We've had it stood 10,000 days since
you did not get hit for that.
Yes.
What?
Because it's misinformation. And so all of these different things that were crafted over the last 2 years to fight COVID misinformation are now, I've gotten hit for an environmental thing.
See, that's the next step. You get ready.
Yeah. Have you read John Barry's book about the 1918 flu?
About
the Great Influenza, I think it's called.
I've seen it.
I
know
what
it's called that anymore.
Yeah. I read that book like the first month, and I'm so glad I did because so much stuff. If you go back with hindsight now and read that book, like Philadelphia is mentioned in it because Philadelphia in 1918, it was this epicenter of people. It was hit really hard.
Oh yeah,
people. Rely like they didn't have good leadership at the city. They got lied to by the city's elite, and when they realized they had been lied to later, it turned violent in the city because that like people just realized like these guys didn't have our best interest at heart. And you've seen so much like the anti-mask league of San Francisco that has come out of it. Like you've watched history repeat itself, and you had three big waves. And then it just kind of went away, and every effort that they made in that period to like try and calm it didn't work. Like you just had to let the virus burn through and run its course. Like,
fool me once, shame on you.
You know what I mean? Like,
fool me twice.
The information.
You can't fool me a third time.
Yeah, the information's out there. Yeah.
Does it not speak though to the absolute arrogance of some of our bureaucrats and our government
that they
officials.
Can literally control a virus and control human biology and can control
and this everything. Same mentality. I know this is not where we're talking today, but this is the exact same mentality we have with climate change. And this is, I know I've not made a lot of friends because I brought on some people who have been very dissenting voices about the narrative when it comes to anthropogenic climate change, and not necessarily in terms of what we're doing, but the impact we can have. And it is that mentality that we can control the stuff that we can't control. And there is this, it almost goes into a religious mentality of understanding that there are things that are beyond your control, and to be okay with that, to be at peace with that, and to almost trust God's plan, right? The idea of faith. That's where the idea of, you know, faith, you're putting your faith into something else or taking that best interest at heart. Even though you don't know what the next step's going to be, and you yourself can't verify, you're putting that blind trust into that higher being.
Right.
Sorry about that.
No, you're okay.
I'm so used to my microphone being stable.
Stable.
This guy's heavy too, by the way.
I know. Yeah.
I lift your weights.
You got to have the pinky up.
Dainty.
Pinky's out, and that kind of helps balance it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, you're the old pro here, Chris Spangle. But no, you do see this push more towards this this. We need to have this one size fits all solution.
Yeah.
And don't question it. Because if you do, you're not trusting the science. You want grandma to die, right?
You're not on the team.
And if you're not on the team, not only should you be cast out, you need to be punished. And that's what we're seeing in Canada, is that group of people who have stood up to not just say this is wrong, but now they're actually fighting back. Now they have to be punished, despite, I think it's Ontario just decided to pull back their mandates yesterday, 2 days ago. And yet they're still punishing the people who are fighting against said mandates. Why? Because control. Because if we let them have the win, it defeats the narrative of the past 2 years.
Years ago, when Alex Jones in a single day was pulled from 12 different platforms, including his Shopify account, his PayPal account, you know, I said at the time, this is terrible. You shouldn't do this. And if we don't say something now, it will expand.
And everyone kind of gave it a pass.
Oh, it's Alex Jones, right? Yeah. Like, and you let them get away with playing with people's money. They're going to keep doing that.
Well, it was him. It was Milo Yiannopoulos. Mm-hmm. It was Laura Loomer, right? Remember, she got her banks wouldn't let her.
People you can't defend and you don't want to defend.
But you need to defend.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And
that's
why I'm so pissed at the ACLU over the past few years, because more than the past few years. But I mean, this is the organization that used to go defend the rights of Nazis to have free speech. Yeah. And now they're defending the right to censor what is considered misinformation online for COVID purposes. Like, that's how how far these organizations that were originally the bastions of civil liberties have lost their way. And it can happen overnight. And I think sometimes we as Americans get a little cocky because we're like, that can't happen here.
Mm-hmm.
It is happening here. We're seeing it happen here. We're seeing it happen in our northern border. We're seeing it happen across the Atlantic over in Europe. And it's happening right now. And yet we still have the arrogance that we see our politicians also reflect back of, well, it can't happen here. The politicians, you know, trying to control the uncontrollable. We have to really start to humble ourselves and focus on the small things that we can control. And that's in our immediate circles, our communities. And frankly, it starts with us cleaning our own room. I know we were joking beforehand.
Yeah, my room's a mess.
We weren't shown the room on the tour because we were told the room is a mess, so we can't look. But
Jordan Peterson would be so mad.
He would be so sad. But no, we need individuals to make themselves the best version of themselves first. Yeah. And I know it's very like Tony Robbins, but how can we expect other people to take our solutions seriously if we are a hot mess?
It's what we talked about at the beginning of the pandemic. The best the government can do is $1,200. And if you don't have savings, the government can give you $1,200.
Motherfucking breadcrumbs.
Right. You need savings because you need it, right? So that's just the best that they can do. Yeah, when the Klan and the Nazis wanted to have a rally in Skokie, Illinois, and the government said no, the ACLU came in and defended. And people tend to look at these situations like there's two sides. You're either on the side of the Nazis or the government. But there's a third side, and that's the ACLU. You want to be the ACLU.
Two sides that I don't particularly
want. Right. You have either to be on the side of the principle. And so how you viewed BLM and the way that Black Lives Matter protests of all the different varieties, you take out the people who are looting, who are destroying property, and you leave the people alone who are peacefully protesting. Like in LA, you saw cops going in and just beating the crap out of people who were just peacefully standing there blocking the road.
And yet they would not go and stop people for who were smashing windows and looting stores.
Right.
Which to your average person makes them say,
no sense.
What the fuck?
Right. You're against the principle, but not the crime.
Right.
And so, you know, if you look at the truckers, you've got to be, if you were on the side of the rule of law and you can't block streets in LA, then you can't block them in Ontario. But you need to look at this stuff as the principle, like the principle to stand up and speak out against your government. I've become much more sympathetic to protests these last 2 years.
Regardless of what they are. Yeah.
Because that's the only way you're going to get attention.
Hong Kong. I mean, that was the ultimate starting off here of protests, ironically enough, in 2019.
Yeah.
And it shows, I think, really the importance of being able to stand up and speak out when you're seeing wrong and to do so despite the consequences. And thank God you have somebody up in Canada, like the truckers and the Freedom Convoy, who are doing that, because we are seeing not just the different provinces in Canada starting to pull back their restrictions, but we're seeing a lot of states and localities here in the United States following suit.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, it's gotta be a direct result, not only just of the fact that these policies are so unpopular, but they see the writing on the wall that if this happens here, like it will crush so many different areas.
The thing about extremists is that they always overstay their welcome.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter if it's a right, left, a moderate militant, you know, like they go too far and they piss people off when they're activists. And eventually the people are polite. They don't say anything. And then when they go too far, they jump on you. They pile on. Right. And that's where we're headed. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we've identified the problem, which is that we're not in charge. So when we come back, we're going to talk about, you know, Brian moving to Newcastle, Indiana, you moving from Dallas. We didn't even get to you. You moved from Dallas to Louisville, but you don't have like a sexy story like Brian. You just kind of move for like life stuff, right?
Yeah.
To be basically close to family.
Basically.
But when we come back, we're going to talk about, you know, where's Brian and Caleb and taking it? What are we going to do and all that good stuff? So stay tuned. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us. Brian, so you've moved to Newcastle, Indiana. And I don't know how or why, but your boss said you're happier. Because if I lived in Newcastle, Indiana, I'd be depressed, I'd be bored, I'd be having blackout curtains because Jeremiah would be outside my window trying to force friendship every 5 minutes. Has he left you alone? Like, is Jeremiah coming over unannounced, Caitlin? Like,
no,
Not yet? Okay, all right.
But well. They were actually so instrumental in us actually getting our house like moved into. Like, Jeremiah was there with a horse trailer, like, helping us unload everything. Sarah's mom was there helping us unload our U-Haul to put it into a storage facility right before we moved in. Like, the fact that Jeremiah and Sarah were helping us has made it so much easier to actually move in. So, thank God. Yeah.
So, what was it about the pool party and you guys coming out here that, like, it sparked it for you guys that this would actually be? Because I was always, like, half joking, like, because I didn't think you'd actually move. But I'm like, come on, pussy, if you don't like it, move. Do something about it. And you actually took us up on that.
Yeah.
What was it about that trip that
you underestimated how much Philadelphia sucks? Yeah.
Definitely a part of it. But honestly, so going back to my CEO, you mentioned him and saying that I'm a lot happier. Well, he has a saying, and I love this saying. I use it all the time, is good people bring out the good in people.
Yeah.
And when we came out here to visit for the wall pool party, it was just intoxicating, like the positivity. Mm. And there is something to be said about surrounding yourself not just with people who have shared experiences, but people who also have shared values, shared principles, and shared goals.
Yeah.
And in Philadelphia, that was apparently obvious that that was difficult to find. And just by the nature of how Philadelphia is set up, you want to go downtown, you got to drive 40 minutes and then you got to spend 35 minutes looking for parking. and you know, the entire time surrounded by other people who not only aren't your target market, they're actively against you.
Yeah.
And that alone being here has made the biggest difference. And we really saw it on display when we came to visit back in July, because everybody was just out of their way, above and beyond nice. It was so refreshing to not
literally
question.
Everybody was just being themselves too.
And that's the thing.
They're putting on a show for us Philly people. Like, this is how everybody is.
And I joked, I was like, you guys did a great job after we left. And you guys were like, yeah, it was just us being us. And that's truly why when we first went out here, that seed was planted, because good people bring out the good in people. And I cannot encourage people enough to surround themselves more with good people, because I mean, if not for your happiness, it's for your ability to network with like-minded people and to really flourish in that specific area. Because if you can have the shared values and goals, you're not focusing on the nonsense stuff. So I use this example with my dad the other day. And it's funny because I've been joking with my dad now about coming down to visit here to get him to come down here. And when I was talking to him, I was like, here's why the conversation is different. In Indiana, we're having a conversation about really promoting like school choice, right? Whereas in New York, you're fighting to get your Second Amendment rights back with the stupid New York SAFE Act. Like, there is a difference in having to constantly play defense and to actually be focusing on like, oh, hey, we're getting real tangible steps on getting things really better versus just like always having to fight back and play defense and having to respond to narratives versus you're the one out there actually setting the narrative and having success getting things like installed and implemented. So yeah, it's been awesome.
One of the things about Indiana that has made Indiana and Indianapolis special is that everybody gets along. And I think that like a lot of hardcore libertarians will go, that's horrible, why would you do that? But the fact that like Mark Rutherford
goes, what's the fun in that?
Right.
Come on.
I can't be a social misfit to people if I'm, you know, like it's libertarians, Republicans, and Democrats. Like it started with the city committee. Now, a lot of this came with some big spending projects, but it did make the city livable. I will give them that. You heard us talk about it with Rob Kendall. And that vibe, that's the bad part of it. The good part is, like school choice, for example. The mayor, the Democratic mayor in 2004, I think it was, introduced charter schools to Indianapolis. And that's because Democrats, Republicans, independents, everybody got together every Thursday morning for breakfast and said, what do we want Indianapolis to be? What do we want to turn it into? And political parties came second. It was the shared values, the shared goals of we all want kids to get a good education. Because if we get them a good education, they're going to have more prosperity. We're going to have the poor black areas. If they have good education, they're going to have more opportunity. And so, you know, the values of educating children coming first meant that the mission for Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, Independents turn into school choice on a statewide scale. My sister is sending her kids to IPS. Like, would you send your kids to the Philadelphia school system, or would you want to go to a private school or a township school or somewhere else, right? We want to send our kids to IPS because it's a great education, right? Like, well, we want to homeschool, but we may not have some choices there.
You said you hate sales, but right there, you don't hate sales, because sales is nothing more than like building real solutions.
Yeah.
And that's where people are looking for politics. And this is the unfortunate reality, is that we see politics as a means to get, in too many cases, our principles into action.
Yeah.
Whereas your average person is looking at politics as a means to solve problems that they see. So if we can start to solve those problems even outside of the political infrastructure, just by the very nature of building these solutions in the private sector, then they are no longer the conversations that are making their way to the ballot box, but rather it's the larger conversations, right? It's about, now we're talking about changing the conversation towards funding students versus funding systems.
Right.
And then you're not having to constantly play catch up every single time that something bad happens. You have to like start over from square one. It's you're building on the shared success, right? Almost.
When you look at Dion on the pat down,
yeah,
Dion is a Bernie Sanders socialist. And I am a right-leaning libertarian
too.
And I love Dion. And Dion and I have taught each other a lot. He's taught me a lot, at least. Dion and I don't want anything different in terms of people's lives. Like, he wants socialized medicine because he wants the same outcome that
he wants better health care.
He wants better health care. He wants better results.
It's a means to an end.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, that's part of what scares me about people like you fleeing the blue states, is because as we continue to silo away from each other, the people in Philadelphia deserve a Brian Nichols in their midst, you know, need a Brian Nichols in their midst.
Maybe not deserve, but,
but it's...
That was a joke that you caught. But no, but you know what I mean? Like, do you think that the people fleeing blue states drives our polarization more because people, go listen, like I said last week, to the Joe Rogan episode about the N-word with me, Deanna, Miss Pat. I used to think that you shouldn't say the N-word because you get in trouble for it. And that's not, you don't want to suffer consequences. Now I don't say it because I love my black friends and I know how that affects them. I have empathy for them. I want to honor my friends, right? Like, that's a totally different psychological shift once you've had experiences with other people. Like, I'm very thick-headed. Like, I need to experience something to understand it. So does it concern you that you guys that like you're fleeing blue states like Philadelphia and Texas?
I would answer that with a question. Do you see that with, are you resentful if you go to Target over Walmart? Right.
Right.
And the reason being is because it's almost like a self-selection in where we're air quotes doing business. In this case, my doing business is living. Where am I going to live?
Right.
And I think you don't even like... Go back to the whole thing we were talking about before with COVID. Your context of COVID out here was so different than mine.
Way different.
Right? Because you didn't have to even think about that.
But my context of like the right wing and how crazy some of those people are is probably different than yours.
Absolutely.
Because I'm like, no, these guys are like really not good.
No,
like,
no, you know I 100%. But, yeah. But at least you can address that on your playing ground
right.
in that world versus... If you're constantly trying to like get the overwhelming majority of people to change their mind, like that's not even in our wheelhouse. Like, it's not even our marketplace. Right. So like, why spend that time? And I know that sounds weird, like counterintuitive, like why aren't you reaching out for more people? But like, you have to go after the people who are your actual market. Like, you can't go after people who you want to be your target market. It has to be people who are actually your target market. Mm-hmm. And we see this, I think, a lot from LP National, is that they so badly want to convince your like elitist leftist that like, listen, your ideas are just wrong. You have to be convinced.
You have me on Morning Joe enough.
You'll just be convinced, right, of my libertarian ideas. And that's unfortunately not who's ever going to be our target market. Like, they're never going to jump on board with the ideas of liberty overnight. And we have to understand that in that world, our target market is going to be probably just more like your average person. I was just in Wisconsin doing a business event with probably 200, 300 or so business owners. And I would say it was probably leaning a little bit more Republican-ish, but like split pretty even from, and it was not even an ideologically centered conversation. It was just small business owners and entrepreneurs who were tired of government getting in their way and looking to network together to find real common solutions to the problems that they see in the business environment. So I'm talking to them and overtly non-political conversations and talking about shared values. And it was quite obvious that these people that I'm speaking to resonate with the ideas of liberty, and they are so on board with the idea of, like, don't hurt people, don't take their stuff, let me be a small business owner, a solution builder, versus somebody who's constantly, you know, responding to government red tape, constantly having to, you know, struggle bribing a politician in order to get funding for some pet project. Like, let me actually do what I want to do without having to jump over these stupid barriers and hurdles. And if we can talk to them, we can build a massive movement, because there's so many people. They are the number one untapped demographic. And the reason that they don't get politically active is because they are terrified that government will be used against them. Yeah. But this is why I'm so excited, especially going to that event, is because you're seeing business owners starting to fight back. They're tired. They're looking for alternatives. So let's give them a real alternative, a real viable solution. They're open for it. Let's go.
And I mean, as long as you're like leading with, you're not leading to dominate. You know, like my experience with the pat down, talking to tens of thousands of people a week, and the majority of them are center left. You know, I get a lot of, I don't agree with you, and I don't know that I'll be a libertarian, but I at least know you're not a caricature. You're not out to hurt me. You're not Ayn Rand, who's just selfish. Like, you actually, we share some values. We're talking about the same things. Like,
you have empathy.
I will give you I will at least give you a thought. You know what I mean? And that's, I think, all libertarians can do in the future is, like, don't lead with your chin. Rex Bell has talked about this forever. That's why Indiana has been successful as LP. Like, we don't lead with our chin, right? Like, you lead with where's the public at? And then you go and talk to them about those issues, things like school choice, healthcare. There's a reason Eric Larson's on the network.
Pull the string on my back so I can do my, like, Toy Story Woody phrase. Meet people where they're at on the issues they care about. Like, literally, that's as easy as it is. And yet we overcomplicate it all the time because we have this very pretty and beautiful philosophy that we so badly want other people to also appreciate. And we lead with that, whereas we fail to understand that that's not what people like about us. They like what that does for them.
Libertarians love the systems.
Yes.
They love the systems, and they forget about
the principles,
the messiness of life and the messiness of the public conversation. I guess, Caleb, we should let you talk.
Hey, Caleb. Think? Hey, Brian, how are you?
Doing good, buddy. Only got 5 minutes left. What do you want to say?
No, I kind of come from this region a little bit myself, and then I moved to Texas for a little bit, but like Texas was a very different experience from Philly, obviously, but I was in a blue city, somewhat blue city, during the COVID lockdowns and everything, so it was still very present and familiar. And a lot of the things that had honestly nothing to do with COVID, I think that we shared, in like frustrations as far as just like, you know, I found myself getting very like, anxious, and I had a lot of anxiety because, you know, there was just so much going on, and a lot of people who want to tell me what to do is suddenly very present in my life. Whereas like I'm someone who really appreciates the community aspect, but I also appreciate being kind of left alone. So Kentucky for me was sort of a natural next step. Of course there were family aspects of that as well, but ultimately, like, I really love being able to step away, get into it, you know, whenever, get into like the city life or the community life whenever I can, but ultimately be able to kind of step away and sit back and relax and reflect on those things. But, you know, one thing that kind of popped up in my mind as both of you were speaking
ranting.
Whatever you want to call it.
Droning on.
This is one of the things that I really discovered and really kind of pushed my understanding of what kind of a libertarian I even am whenever I was putting together the first season of my program. And Chris, you and I had spoke about this a little bit in the fall about the Benjamin Franklin episode that I put together. And basically this was kind of his like lightning in a bottle quality of like what he discovered, like true liberty means. And it means getting the people in your community to have skin in the game, basically. Yeah. Like, you can't expect everyone to automatically agree with you. You have to be involved with them in their lives. And as much as I would love to, you know, go back into into a rural home with no neighbors for 20 miles or whatever, that sounds lovely. But the fact of the matter is that unless I get my neighbor to understand the importance of liberty, and a lot of that is going to come down to just getting them to know me and getting them to know who I am and understand that I'm not just out to get them. I don't just like want to strip them of their health care or strip them of like of public education or something like that. And it's reality is I just want the best for them, and to be able to empower them with that sense of community is going to be the best shot that any libertarian will ever have to advance these causes.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that we really try hard at the We Are Libertarians podcast network is to drive you to engage with your community. Humanize the people that you don't agree with. So you'll be humanized to them. You'll see that you have things in common, and that your differences aren't as far apart as the media makes it seem. In some ways, we're anti-media, we're anti-political, because we're trying to just get you to engage for change. Like, get out there and talk to people. Because the Pat Down and the Leaders and Legends podcast have been so transformational for me over the last 3 years, because I'm put in a position where I'm talking to two groups of people that I haven't spent my life around. Largely a Democratic audience. You guys thought I was going to say black, but that's true too. But I mean, largely liberal people. And then with Robert going and talking to the political establishment of my city that I railed against as a libertarian for 10 years. And you sit across from somebody that has a project that costs tens of millions of dollars, and you don't see that person as evil anymore. When you hear their rationale, you go, oh man, this person thought that they were doing a good thing. And in some ways, there are some benefits. They just don't understand the long-term costs of their decision-making, because their vanity wanted this one project. But then when you look at the whole picture, you go, that one project isn't just one project. It's a debt that has to be paid back, right? But they then have a contact in me that then can hear a different perspective. And when we're out there talking to people, talking in our communities, engaging with each other, we're going to be a stronger people. And that's really what this network is about, is just really trying to encourage you, you know, to understand our heritage and where, you know, through history, modern politics, and profiles on liberty, how hard fought it was to get to where we're at, to have the prosperity that we have. The Chris Spangle Show, to engage in your community, to understand the issues so you sound informed, and trying to be anti-propaganda. Brian, out there, how to sell yourself, how to sell our ideas, how to talk to people. Hody, how to have modeled for you disagreements. Hody's show is modeling disagreements amongst people. How do you have these contentious arguments in a way that is, you know, which I don't know why he started with Chris Galt. That was a stupid decision, but he only lasted two episodes. You know, that's, we're not a network that is trying to just interview libertarians about being libertarian. And then that's not a knock on those guys. You can sit and talk libertarian philosophy all day long, but the We're Libertarians podcast network is about giving you talent and skills and information that help you to engage in your community. So to both of you guys, I want to say thank you for being a part of the network. It's so great to have you close. You know, you're 2 hours away now, you're an hour away, and we're going to start doing a lot more stuff in person, start coming up with a lot more ways that we can engage, get back to maybe some live shows at some point, and just do more stuff now that everybody's kind of ready to get back to real life. So anything you guys want to finish up with, we'll give Caleb the, we'll give you the last word. Actually, Brian, you go, you, anything you want to say, anything you want to promote. Do you have the ability to promote yourself, please?
I can try. Let's see. You can find me over at BrianNicholsShow.com. No, you can, yeah, BrianNicholsShow.com. We do. So I was doing 7 days a week. Just with the move, it's been crazy trying to keep up. So
destroys your life. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna get back into the swing of things now that I'm actually like getting my routine in order, yeah. Which has been like the past month of just getting recalibrated. It's been like relearning how to ride a bike almost.
Uh-huh.
So we're getting there. So
all the things that went in the right places over here don't go in the right places, and now I don't have a droid for this. It's maddening.
I had to build my desk again. It was a whole thing. So we're right now kind of 5 days a week. We're going to get back to seven soon. So TBD in terms of when that will actually happen. Yeah. But in the meantime, to stay up to date, BrianNicholsShow.com is where you can go ahead and subscribe to the program. We also have our morning sales huddle, which is 5 days a week. I am sending out a morning email to my subscription list of ballpark, I think like 250 or so people who have signed up. And what it is more or less one-on-one sales coaching I used to do with my sales team back when I led a sales team out in the Northeast. And it's real tangible things you can take and put into action right now to be a better sales pro, both in your day job if you're a sales professional, but also in the world of liberty. Yeah. And as a sign of good faith for signing up, I also sent over a free copy of my ebook, 4 Easy Steps You Can Implement Now to Help Sell Liberty to Friends and Family, which is the Tom Woods approach, right? So I'll send that to your inbox. Mm-hmm. And then other than that, though, if I may, Nicholas Liberty.
Will it cost me 9,999? No,
no, it'll cost you 9,999 emails in your inbox. But no, otherwise, find me at B Nichols Liberty, Twitter and Facebook, and probably somewhere else once we get nuked there. So,
yeah. Caleb, last thoughts and shameless self-promotion.
Yeah, so I, as most of you will know who are listening, I am hosting Profiles in Liberty here on the We Are Libertarians Network. It has honestly been one of the most rewarding experiences that I can possibly ask for, just because personally I'm getting a lot out of the stories, even if no one else does. I am.
Your Frederick Douglass episodes were amazing.
Was so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I find that there's something to be said and a lot of wisdom in the people who've come before us, and honestly, a lot of things that we are still discussing today that we act like we've never encountered a solution to this. These people already figured this kind of stuff
out. I'm reading
this
book called Buckley about William F. Buckley in the beginning of the conservative movement.
Yeah.
You should read it. It is literally the Republican Party today.
Yeah.
They're no different 2022.
We act like this is like we're coming up with new solutions and all these like these eureka moments when we figure this kind of stuff out, and it's like Frederick Douglass or someone like Thomas Jefferson or John Adams, you know, back in the founding era, they already knew this kind of stuff. And, yeah. And we just need to remember it and we need to figure out what that meant for them and what liberty meant for them. And I think that we can get a lot out of it with the issues that we're facing today. So currently Profiles in Liberty is running through season 2. It is about halfway through right now. There is going to be 4 episodes a month. So for 2 months is the season. So eight episodes a season. And then I'm about to get started writing the scripts for season 3, which I am incredibly excited. I'm not quite ready to talk about the theme there, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
You put a lot of work into it. I mean, it's a Dan Carlin effort. Carlin light. But you really can tell that you read a lot. You put a lot of perspectives into it, and it's like
Dan Carlin light because it's not like 4 hours long.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's not that much research.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's a lot. You know,
it's like it can. Consumes a lot of my free time, honestly, but it's the kind of stuff that I really do enjoy spending a lot of time doing, because as I mentioned, I'm getting a lot out of these stories, and I'm hoping that other people do too. But if nothing else, you know, it's enriching me, and it's kind of enlightening my understanding of the world around me and the world that has been shaped throughout history around me. So I would highly encourage you all to go check it out. We have, I think 12 episodes out right now total, between the 2 seasons. I'm going to have 2 seasons this month, or excuse me, this year, to come out, season 2 and season 3. So there's a lot of great content coming down the pipes.
Sweet. All right. Well, thank you guys for being here. And thank you to listening to the Chris Spangle Show.
Oh, he had a stroke. Oh, yeah. Poor Chris. We'll wrap things up. Don't worry, folks. Brian Nichols here on We Are Libertarians. Have a good one.
All right. See y'all later.